Hi, my name's Jonathan Harden. Welcome to episode 2 of In Anything at the Minute, the Honest Actors podcast. This is the second part of the launch double bill, so if you found yourself here accidentally, don't forget to go back and listen to episode 1 with Denise Goff. Also, if you haven't already listened to them and you like the podcast, you should go back and listen to a couple of the teasers. The teasers are extracts, about 8 to 10 minutes in length, from interviews that I've already conducted, full-length versions of which will be going out as part of the podcast over the coming months. So it's a way of you finding out what's coming up next, really. So go back and listen to those. Also, don't forget that there are loads of blogs on the website. Articles by actors, people associated with actors, casting directors, acting coaches, journalists, people who've given up acting. So loads of really interesting stuff on there. www.inanything.com. And a reminder of the big launch giveaway. There's a competition online to win a Spotlight annual membership, headshots with stageshots.london, and an annual subscription to The Stage. Go to www.inanything.com/competition to enter for free. That's enough from me. Here it is. Episode 2. Tom Goodman Hill. I am sat in the back garden of Mr. Tom Goodman Hill, and that is just as an explanation of the pastoral sound effects. These have not been pumped in at his request at a later date. These were live in the garden as we chatted. But Tom, first of all, thanks very much for agreeing to do it.
Pleasure.
And to begin, how did you get into acting?
I got into acting. Like most actors, because I didn't feel like I could do anything else. So I really got into it as a member of the Young People's Theatre in Newcastle, where I grew up. And because it's easy to say, oh, I got my first job, you know, and that's how you got into acting, but that's not how it happens. You get into acting because it's the thing you completely fall in love with and feel like that's what you do. So for me, I always trace it back to where that obsession started.
Which was Newcastle?
Which was in Newcastle, yeah.
And, I mean, you've said it's the only thing you could do. What were the things that Tom Goodman Hill tried and failed at?
Academia in general was the thing I was not good at.
Right. So what age were you then when you started involving yourself with the Young People's Theatre?
When I went to see my mum at the Young People's Theatre, it was at the People's Theatre in Newcastle, where she'd been a member for years, and I used to go and see her do plays, and I joined the Young People's Theatre because I loved the building and the people there, and it looked like a social group that was more important to me than most of the people at school who I was at school with. So, and it was a more diverse group of people.
So in the first instance, it was the world more than the thought of performing?
I think that's right, yeah. I think it was being attracted to a set of people that in spite of a whole range of different backgrounds, had a similar outlook, you know, people who were... I think generally I find that actors are optimists who are introverts. I don't think it's right to say that actors are extroverts, which I think is a perception that people have looking at actors. They think, oh, you're an extrovert and you're always moaning about your job. I think the opposite is true. I think you wouldn't be an actor if you weren't an optimist, because you wouldn't survive if you weren't an optimist in this business. And also, I don't think extroverts necessarily need the outlet of acting to survive. So I think it's introverted people who enjoy going into a different persona or personality and using that personality to express themselves is a more accurate way of putting it. So I think they're generally optimists who are introverts.
So little Tom, the optimistic introvert, somehow finds himself surrounded by like-minded people, a community of like-minded people. What's the first memory you have then of being on stage?
So I'd done school plays and really enjoyed them. But at the Young People's Theatre, we did all sorts. We were doing, you know, Twelfth Night and Under Milk Wood and David Copperfield and Pinocchio and all,
were you,
all sorts
were you
of stuff.
Always, or were you ever the lead? What kind of role did you fulfill within that company then?
My defining role was Zany the clown in Pinocchio, because he didn't speak throughout, but he never left the stage. It was David Wood's version. And it's important to me. I was talking to my mum about this the other day, actually. It was important to me because it was the time I discovered that you didn't have to speak to be an actor. And it was also the time I discovered that trying to be the centre of attention on stage is the worst thing you can do. And Nick Whitfield, who was the director at Young People's Theatre, tearing me off a strip for stealing scenes when I should not be the focus of the scene. Literally destroying me afterwards and going, you ruined it, you know. Whereas from my point of view, there was a lot of people enjoying watching me being stupid and having fun and making people laugh, but not actually helping to tell the story. It's still the best lesson I've ever learned. But that was, you know, that's where I think the obsession really grew, was at the People's.
And you've mentioned your mum a couple of times already. Obviously you had her support as a kid. Is that something then that once you started to think this might be a serious career option, did that continue, or were there...
She very sensibly told me to get a proper qualification, so I qualified as a teacher, and as a primary school teacher, which I loved. I loved doing that. I was just a hopeless administrator and could never have survived as a teacher. So that was 4 years at university doing, I think I did 36 plays while I was there, which shows you where my priorities were lying.
Did you then go on to drama school after that again?
I did. I went to Bristol Vic. I had 2 years, because I'd also done National Youth Theatre for 2 years as well before going to university.
You're the most highly qualified actor in Britain.
So I done all of that, and then 2 years doing, putting together a fringe company, which was great. And I decided that was probably a good time after, you know, working very hard for less than nothing on the fringe, doing profit loss, that I would try and do some training. So I went to Bristol, and I sort of didn't think about it very hard. I just auditioned, and I was really lucky. I just got into Bristol on the first try and didn't even...
And were you lucky in retrospect? Is it something that you feel you benefited from as an actor, or... Like I said, is it something... A lot of people look back on the training and do so with a kind of, yeah, was it necessary means to an end? How do you look on yours?
I loved being at Bristol Vic Theatre School. I really enjoyed it. It's a difficult one. I don't know. Like I said earlier, I think back more to Young People's Theatre and to Nick Whitfield, who ran that, than I do to thinking about things that, for instance, Rudy Shelley said to me. I think the most valuable stuff I got from Bristol Vic was a vocal training with Francis Thomas, the voice teacher there, is extraordinary. And it teaches you to take knocks, teaches you not to always succeed. That's really good, really good. So it was useful in that respect. It was useful socially.
So, we could obviously go from here, and one version of this interview would go through the highlights of everything you've done since then. But one of the things that I've said to everybody I've interviewed so far that I hope will characterise these interviews is that that's almost the easy route. It's the obvious route, and it's the kind of route that probably provides least interest to the people that are listening. So, if I was to condense all of that time between, you know, graduating from Bristol and now, and I was to say one thing could represent you, if you could be known for one job, what's the thing you're most proud of having achieved as an actor?
You've literally silenced me with that question, because I don't know.
It's a terrible question.
It's not a terrible question.
I find
myself
saying this a lot. It's a terrible question.
It's not a terrible question. It's a really good question. It's just, I don't suppose I've ever asked myself it, because you sort of think that way madness lies. You think if you define yourself by one role, you'll never escape it.
Oh, I feel bad.
No, not at all. Because I've almost never not enjoyed a job. I suppose the one I want to be remembered for is John Lilburn in The Devil's Whore. But whether I am remotely remembered for that, I don't know, or ever will be. The one I'm most recognised for now is Mr. Grove and Mr. Selfridge, which is fine by me. I love the character, so that's great. But there are things that that I've done on stage that are more important to me than anything I've done on camera. I love doing new writing, so it's new writing that matters to me more than anything.
Is that because of the process in rehearsals then, obviously, more than
probably.
In performance?
Creating a role for the first time, knowing you're the first person to say those words, working with a writer, because writers are they're top of the tree for me. They're more important than anyone. And so working with writers is the best work you can do.
And that, now, it kind of frees me up to move outside of specific jobs and open it up to kind of general questions about, without sounding very grand about it, what it is to be an actor. So I've asked this of everyone so far, and I'm going to continue with you. An agent who shall remain nameless once told me that the only time, in his experience, actors were ever truly happy was in the 5 minutes after they got a job. And from the 6 minute onwards, they started to doubt their own ability to do that job. Do you recognise anything of yourself in that? And if you don't, what from the 6th minute is your thought process?
I recognise all of that, but I'm an optimist. So I suppose I like to think that if you get the job, that means they think you can do it and you need to run with that. So I always, almost without exception, I think I've always enjoyed rehearsals. I love rehearsing. And I suppose, like all actors, you get to the point where you've had enough of rehearsal. You want to get out of the rehearsal room. You never want to see the director again. And you just want to do the play to the best of your ability, tell that story fresh every time for a new audience who's never seen it before. And I love doing that. I absolutely love doing that. No, I think, particularly in theatre, I'm pretty much always happy. I think it's when a run goes on longer than I feel I can cope with it, then I quickly become miserable. People who've worked with me know that I will start to hate every audience that comes in.
So as an optimist then, do you go into auditions with that optimism?
No one enjoys the process of auditioning. It's a deep pit in the soul going through auditions. Again, as an optimist, I always go in going, I've got as good a chance as anybody else. But more often than not, I'm usually going in the room thinking that I'm overreaching myself in at least one aspect and that I'm not going to be appropriate, you know. But still part of me goes, but I hope they at least shortlist me, even if I think I'm wildly inappropriate for the role. You know, you've still got that going on in your head.
Do you still look around a room? Do you get that kind of... Do you cast other people in the room sometimes when you're waiting?
Definitely. Definitely. I don't want to name names, but the number of times that I've been going for a casting and someone comes out the door and I go, oh well, there, clearly of course he's here, of course he is,
and I'd cast him.
Absolutely. Happens all the time, and there's a short list of about 6 that I say that of every single time. I think yeah he's gonna get it, of course he's gonna get it. I would definitely cast
him. I've been in rooms, I've cast guys across the way and they've went into different auditions and I've been slightly disappointed.
Yeah.
So do you agonise over them afterwards? Or do you just draw a line under an audition once you've done it?
I used to agonise ridiculously. I used to completely torture myself, as my agent will tell you, because they got sick of me ringing up and going, really, no feedback? I would really tie myself in knots about what the outcome might be. And I would want to know the negative feedback as well as the positive feedback. And I would almost insist on it. About 5 years down the line, I stopped doing that to myself. And every now and then there'll be a particular job where I go, really? They didn't even think twice about me? Not even a recall? Really? And I'll want to know. But generally, that's a really, really, really bad thing to do, because you go mad.
So on the flip side, do you allow yourself to engage in any kind of fantasy when you think goes well?
Yeah, and I've done that to myself too often, where I've come out and I've gone, well, that couldn't have gone any better. That's in the bag. And then, of course, you don't get it. So, so I try not to do that either. So I suppose what I'm saying is, I've got to the point now where I prepare as thoroughly as I possibly can, and then the moment I leave the room, I don't think about how it went. I banish it from my mind, yeah.
Do you think there's a place for luck, or how much do you believe in the role of luck?
Luck is massive. It rules the industry. I'm absolutely sure of that. And I'm sure I'm a benefactor,
Well, my next question was, have you been lucky?
Yeah, I've been enormously lucky. I wasn't first choice for it. I don't think it's any secret. I wasn't first choice for Mr. Selfridge. I know that it had been offered to another actor.
Nobody's ever first choice for anything.
No, exactly. So it's like, of course it's luck, you know. Yeah. And I doubt that I was even necessarily top of the list of people they called when that actor dropped out very close to the job, you know. We've just worked on the Truth Commissioner, and I wasn't cast in that. And it was only because the actor who was supposed to be playing my part was stuck doing a pilot somewhere in the States and told the producer, ask Tom, that I got the job. I mean, it was pure luck, luck. So luck is massive, a massive thing.
A kind of follow on from luck, do you believe in big breaks? And do you think you've had your big break?
I don't believe in big breaks, but I have in the moment believed about 20 times that this is the big break.
This is it.
Yeah.
This is going to change everything.
This is it. This is when I no longer have to go and do meetings. This is when I no longer have to audition. I'm now at the point where I don't have to go and do that. Never happens.
You're always
back in the room learning 15 pages for one meeting, which is twice what you would ever have to learn for a day's work. And you've got to be absolutely on it, convince them you are that person with zero rehearsal, no page after page after page of stuff, sit in a room feeling basically humiliated, and go through that process no matter how successful you are. I think there's about 5 people on the planet who don't have to go through that. Still an optimist, even though I know that process will never end. I'm still optimistic about the way it could go. I'm still sitting here going, I'm enjoying the job, I'm enjoying being an actor. I feel like, a lucky guy.
Oreo break. Just a quick interruption from me here to say, if you're enjoying the podcast, please subscribe on iTunes. If you're feeling particularly generous, you can also leave a rating and a review. If you're struggling with that process, as I've said before, there's a quick video on the website, www.inanything.com. That should demystify that process. If you've done that already, don't forget we're on Twitter at Honest Actors and on Facebook, facebook.com/Honest Actors. And if you haven't entered, don't forget the competition. inanything.com/competition. A Spotlight annual membership, headshots with stageshots.london, and an annual subscription to The Stage. inanything.com/competition. Back to Tom. What's then the longest, this is a personal question, what's the longest you've gone without working to your memory?
The longest without an acting job was 3 months.
3 months. And was that long enough for you to feel like this was going to be a problem, this might continue? Did anything of Tom the Optimist start to kind of...
You see, because there's a difference between being an optimist and being insecure.
Yeah.
So you can be an insecure optimist.
Right.
You can still think, I'm going to be okay, I'm going to be okay, and still have days where all you do is stare at the wall. I have a lot of those days. But that they don't necessarily define you. So I've done days when all I've done is binged on The Walking Dead, and all I can think of is that the world's basically ending. Because that's, day to day, that's what being an actor can do to you. Your insecurities can take you to a point where you don't even want to get out of bed. But it doesn't necessarily define you. I'm sure there are people who find that really, really hard, and it can really close in on them. But actually, I think it needn't. You can say, well, that was a bad day. Today, I'm going to get up and I'm not even going to get in the shower. I'm just going to put clothes on and walk out the front door and just walk for a bit and just do something different. You know, just.
So there's the question then. On the days after those days, what is it that you do to regain some kind of sense of optimism to stay sane whenever it seems like losing sanity might be edging ever closer?
Yeah, it's different. It's difficult because I'm also quite an addictive person. So it could be, you know, I sort of get obsessional periods with things like going to the gym. But then because I'm addictive and faddish and I start to get insecure about going to the gym, I stop going to the gym. And then you think, okay, I'll just watch all of Breaking Bad. That'll be fine. That'll get me out of it. Or you decide that there's a certain book that if you read all of it, that's going to get you through, you know, the next 2 or 3 days. Or you obsessively clean the house. Or you just find something. I mean, I like you, I tried creative writing, and I tell myself that I'm not bad at that. But what I don't really have is the application to finish it. That's the thing. It's the finishing that is so hard for so many actors, I think. Yeah. I was a solicitor's clerk, which I did for a long time, actually, outdoor clerking for a couple of years. Yeah, I don't know what I would do now if I couldn't act. I wouldn't be able to go back to teaching.
Have you ever considered giving up?
I must have done. I must have done. But probably deep down, no. No, I don't think I ever did. I think that's probably why I'm still doing it now, is because in about 1993, I decided to burn all bridges, and it was acting or nothing. And I think it was probably the healthiest thing I could do as an actor, was to do that. But the industry was different then. So going into the industry in 1995, coming out of training then, the way certainly television was paid, which I got into about 4 or 5 years after coming out of drama school, it was paid better. You know, royalties were better, repeat fees were better. I feel very strongly for any actor coming out of drama school since 2002, 2003, when the old BBC contracts ended, when a lot of those kind of royalty-paying contracts just died. Because now you have no option but to work constantly. And the same is true of me now. I mean, you're never at a point where you just go, oh, I can sit back and watch the royalty checks come in. You just can't. You're constantly working. You know, I remember even you know, Roger Allam, I'm Truth Commissioner, you know, the lead in his own movie, was saying exactly that. He went, I can't stop. What am I going to do? I never got a sitcom. And then, you know, I never did that. I never got a comedy that was just going to bring the checks in. So I'm screwed, aren't I? I've got to carry on till I die, you know. And that's very true.
What's the most difficult thing about being an actor?
keeping your end up.
The amount of times my mother said that to me on the phone.
Yeah, keep your end up.
Keep your end up.
Yeah. Yeah, keeping your self-belief is always the hardest thing. Being absolutely sure that you can continue to do this and will continue to do this for the rest of your life, because you have no... It's not a career. It's a Derek Jacobi quote from when he was doing Desert Island Discs that has stuck in my head. You don't have a career, you have a series of jobs.
Yeah.
And and that's if you're lucky. So, you know, you're never going to be promoted. You know, it doesn't matter how hard you work.
You're not head
suddenly,
actor.
Yeah, you're not suddenly going to be head of the acting department. You know, you're...
Acting supervisor.
Yeah, you just got to keep going. And so the belief that you can and will keep going is the only thing that drives you. There is nothing else. So you've got to have that. And so that is the hardest thing. You've got to have a voice at the back of your head going, it's all right, keep going. Keep going.
And what's then the worst thing about being an actor? I mean, if you were king of acting, if you were head of the acting department for a day and you could change anything about what it is to be an actor, what kind of things would be on your list?
But you see, that's the point. I wouldn't change anything. I don't think I would change anything. Okay, the only things I would
BBC
change...
BBC contracts?
Yeah, well, the only things I would change are political, you know.
Yeah.
They're not about being an actor. They're about ensuring that actors are properly paid.
Well, that's part of that, and that is part of being an actor. So
minimum wage for an actor should be 200 quid a week higher. I just can't afford to work on stage.
Hence the £200 extra a week, at least.
I can't afford to work on stage, and so I have to, you know, you spend the rest of the year earning the money to allow you to work on stage. And
you'll get a lot of fans for that. That's popular policy.
Yeah.
You might stay as head of the acting department for a little while longer with that one.
And funding in the arts. Just why is it dying? I don't understand why it's dying. It baffles me. I don't know why people don't fund the arts.
You've talked a little bit about the art of acting, so the kind of answer to this question seems obvious and therefore the question seems redundant, but I'm the kind of interviewer that asks redundant questions. So do you consider yourself an artist?
Yeah, I do. I do, and I think it's in the presence of another actor that I feel I can say that, because a lot of the time you apologise for that when people who aren't actors ask you questions like that. Because often it's asked quite kind of combatively or challengingly. So do you consider yourself an artist then? And you go, well, yeah, I'm an artist. And
have you always felt that, or is it something that's...
I felt it because of my reactions to other actors, yeah. Because art moves you, challenges you, makes you think about your own existence, whatever you're doing. Makes you think about the world you live in, makes you think about socio-political movements and ideas, challenges you intellectually, and I can't think of a single moment when I've watched actors working where that, at least one of those, hasn't been true. So that makes actors artists, doesn't it? I think.
Of the people you've worked with and the people you haven't then, who do you think does either medium well?
You know, I watch people like, I watched Glue. I don't know if you saw Glue on E4, absolutely stunning series. And everyone in it was at least 20 years younger than me, and they're all brilliant. They're all incredible. And I watch them and I go, wow, you're doing a thing that I don't do. I want to know how to do that. Young, brilliant actors. And I've got every bit as much to learn from them as Jonathan Pryce, you know. Because it's a weird thing. Really good actors, a lot of them are just brilliant straight out of the box.
Do you think you've gotten better at it with time? You say you learn a lot from watching other actors. Do you think do you feel you've got better at it, more competent?
I don't know. I don't feel like I've got any better. I've maybe got more ways of fooling myself into doing it in a convincing way.
And fooling other people into the bargain.
And fooling other people as well. I suppose so, yeah. I don't think an actor ever loses that feeling. I think anyone, I'm really suspicious of super confident actors. Incredibly suspicious of them. Anyone who's just very kind of balls out in a work environment. I'm like, what are you doing? Why are you like that? You're not an actor if you're like that. You're yourself. Just being arrogant. I don't like it.
Fair enough. So do you consider that at this stage in your career, do you think, you know, not I've made it, I don't think anyone thinks that, and I would be deeply suspicious of anyone who goes, yep, I'm there. Do you think I'm successful? I'll put it another way. If we went back 20 years and said, Tom, 20 years, here's what you'll have, would you have taken it back then?
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So, I suppose in that sense, I'm successful.
So your definition of success must have changed then as your career or as your series of jobs have gotten more impressive.
Yeah, but you don't ever really feel successful.
It's all relative then.
I think it's all relative.
Revised.
Yeah, you hope, because it could all end tomorrow. I'm already worrying what I'm going to do when Mr. Selfridge ends in October, because it's the last series.
It's currently April, by the way. So that's...
I know.
6 months away.
That's 6 months away. I'm already thinking, what am I going to do from the middle of October onwards? Already. Never goes away.
If you could go back then, let's go back to that guy 20 years ago coming out of Bristol. If you go back to him, the guy who would take what you have achieved in an instant, what advice would you offer him to help him shortcut some of that stuff?
There's only one this thing
is
really.
This is going to be good.
Well,
it's not.
I don't think it is good. but it's. I think it's don't limit your own choices. Does that make sense?
In what context? In terms of?
In anything.
Okay.
Okay, well, it's twofold then.
Oh.
If you're going to be an actor, burn your bridges. Be an actor. That's number one. That's number one. Don't. Which I suppose is another way of saying don't give up. But it's not that. It's actually committing yourself.
It's also a way to limit your choices.
Limit your choices.
Some ways.
Exactly.
Part one is limit your choices.
Part one is limit your choices. Part two is don't limit your choices.
In what way?
Because once you've committed to that idea, I'm an actor, that's it, that's what I do, then broaden what that means as widely as you possibly can. So use the bit of you that is an actor in as many ways as possible, which is also another way of saying never say no to any form of job that you feel usefully employs that part of you that is an actor.
I have to ask, is that based on, did you turn something down that you regretted in any big way?
I probably must have done. I'll have put it to bed though. I'll have put it behind me.
Yeah.
But more importantly, I've always tried to say yes to every job that comes along. I'm just not the sort of person who says no to things.
Have you, or do you remember ever getting some quality advice from any other actors, older actors you've worked with? If that would be your advice to yourself, what's the good bits of advice you've received from others?
I kind of remember, well, I mean, that Jacoby quote is, if I could take it personally, I would take it personally. You know, you don't have a career, you have a series of jobs.
If you say it enough, at some point, someone will put it on the internet and ascribe it to you. And that's, I mean, and then yeah. You've achieved, you know, that is success.
My version of it is, you're never going to get promoted. That's my version of it, you know, which I think is kind of yeah. Another way of saying it. It's not like, this isn't like other jobs. You're not going to get a promotion. No one's going to reward you. You know, you're just going to hope you get another job. Because one of the other quotes that always jumps into my head is Anthony Hopkins, who was on Parkinson way back, in like mid-70s, and I was a very small kid. And Parkinson sort of said, you know, how do you approach acting, you know, what makes you take a job? And he just went, I'm a prostitute. We're all prostitutes, aren't we? We're prostitutes. And it was kind of, it was said with such emphasis. He said it so emphatically that it really sunk in there somewhere. We kind of are. It's like the oldest profession. We're prostitutes.
One final question. Are you in anything at the minute?
Oddly enough, no.
No.
I'm not. I'm not in anything at the minute.
So that's it. Episode 2, done. Thanks to Tom Gubbin-Hill for his time, his coffee, his Oreos, and most of all, thanks, Tom, for your unfailing support of everything relating to this podcast. It has meant a huge amount, so thank you. For everyone else, and for Tom, episode 3 is coming your way on Monday, the 12th of October, so a little under a fortnight away. Then every fortnight from that point, there will be a new full-length episode going live. So if you haven't already, now is the time to go to iTunes and click subscribe so that you don't miss out. And if you can't wait that long, don't forget there are teasers online as well. If you haven't heard them all, I strongly recommend you go back and give them a listen. It will give you a great sense of who and what is coming up. Don't forget as well, there are lots of interviews that don't feature as teasers. So lots of surprises for you around the corner over the coming months. And hopefully, maybe, who knows, years. Anyway, in the meantime, don't forget to subscribe on iTunes. Don't forget to enter the competition at inanything.com/competition. Thanks for listening. Speak to you soon.
Honest actors. Mm-hmm.